Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. The Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, I did say it was Friday, right?
Start spreading the news.
Well, that means Schomburg Stu is here. Stu, how you doing?
Well, so far so good. Keeping my fingers crossed.
You're under self-quarantine, so you're okay?
I'm okay for now.
All right, well, that's good to hear. All right, if you'd like to call into the podcast and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so make sure you're over there tomorrow morning looking for something new. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we don't have Stu on Twitter yet, but I am out there at Burke Time. And as always, you can send me any questions or comments you have for Schomburg Stu, as long as you keep them clean, and I will gladly forward them along. So there we go. We're all set.
All right.
All right. Well, now, I did hear today, apparently, Major League Baseball and the Players Association kind of came to an understanding about what they're going to attempt to do to through all this. Have you heard any of this?
No, no. You have to fill me in and tell me what the latest developments are.
All right. Well, here's what I got so far. The rosters have been locked. They will allow movement once there's a new opening day scheduled. Then they went through with their – it appears that they're going to attempt to wait until the ban on, you know, what they describe as mass gatherings have been lifted, because they don't really want to play games with no fans. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I know baseball came out two days ago, and said they want to play as close to as many games as possible. They know they can't get 162, but they want to play as many as possible. So they agreed. Apparently, they agreed on more doubleheaders. The fact that the regular season can go till the end of October, with, of course, the playoffs then being in November, and they've also agreed to the possible use of neutral sites for these playoff games, be it either warm weather cities or domes. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
That makes sense, because I know that with the extension of the season, they're talking about possibly the playoffs going into the end of November as compared to the beginning.
Yeah.
And you would have to think they would want to play in a warm weather city or a city that has a dome stadium.
So, yeah, and then, you know, the other thing that more influenced by the players than anything is no matter what happens, if they play a game or not this year, the service time counts. So that means we'll see guys like Mookie Betts, Trevor Bauer, JT Realmuto, and so on become free agents whether we play a game or not. So, you know, obviously that's a much bigger deal for the players. It could probably be a huge deal for the Dodgers if they don't play a game and they would actually never get to see Mookie Betts play unless, of course, they re-signed him.
Well, that's I was thinking about that, too. And what do you think the odds are about that happening? Or is he going to be, if there is a season, is he one and done with the Dodgers?
You know, I think a lot depends on how they do. I think if they go out and win a World Series, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they just let him go because, you know, they have such a plethora of minor league talent that they could probably fill the gap. You know, and a lot, of course, is going to also want to be with, you know, what he wants as a, you know, as a free agent. I mean, is he going to, you know, is he looking for the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado deal where he's looking, I did hear somebody say $400 million. So I don't know if, you know, that's something he would be getting.
Well, the Dodgers are not opposed to spending a lot of money and going over the cap. And it wouldn't surprise me if he signed some kind of a multi-year deal with them after the season's over.
Yeah, I think the Dodgers are already over the cap, so I don't think it would be that, you know, that big of a deal if they just added one more guy. That doesn't seem to be a, you know, much of an issue for them. So,
have they talked about a 100-game season? Is that the number now that we're hearing?
They actually haven't thrown out numbers yet. All that baseball came out with 2 days ago was that they want to play as close to 162 games as possible. So, you know, and that led to immediately the talk of playing more doubleheaders, which, you know, you have to get the Players Association to agree on, because I believe that there's actually a stipulation in the CBA about how many they could play. So,
yeah,
you know,
I grew up with doubleheaders, and when I started watching baseball, there was almost always a doubleheader on Sundays, without exception.
Yeah, and when I say doubleheaders, what I mean by doubleheaders here isn't what Stu's talking about. Stu's talking about where they would play one game and they would take 30 minutes to an hour break, and then they would play the next game. I'm talking about the one game starting at noon and then coming back at 7 o'clock to play the night game so the owners can get two different gates. That's what they're looking for out of these games. The owners are looking to get as many, you know, as many paydays out of this as possible. So that's what you would be seeing, be it, you know, how many they end up playing. I heard somebody mention up to 7 doubleheaders per team. So, yeah, you know, they would all be set up, you know, just like that. You know, we would get a bunch of Saturday noon games and then a bunch of Saturday 7 o'clock games.
They also used to have a separate gate, what they call the twilight night doubleheaders. The game would start maybe in the late afternoon and there would be a break and then a separate game at a normal nighttime schedule. And there would be a separate gate for those kind of games. A twilight night doubleheader. I wonder if they would start considering that again too.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, anything to get that extra, you know, gate in there. You know, because obviously, I mean, you know, right now the owners are the ones that are really getting killed here. I mean, the season was supposed to start yesterday. You know, and now is when it kind of starts to kick in and starts to hurt them because, you know, they're not getting those gates.
No, this is really a disaster on all levels, not just sports, everything. And the overall cost will be astronomical. It's all said and done. I said billions. I wonder if they wind up into the trillions when he finished with this thing.
Yeah, you do have to wonder, you know, and you know, as of right now, I think the biggest thing for me is there doesn't look like there's an end in sight. But here you go. I found a number for you. Major League Baseball apparently is still hoping to play 140 games for the regular season.
Well, that's an odd number. But maybe I remember when they had 144 game schedule. Maybe when there was some kind of a stoppage.
Yeah, I think right now that's a bit of a reach, you know, with the way things are going. Because, I mean, you know, I don't even think we've seen the light at the end of the tunnel of this. So who has any idea, you know, when we're going to start and if they want a 3-week spring training.
Right. And that's a very optimistic number.
Scenario now, everything clean.
You're talking about a season with that number, they're talking about 90% of the season that will be played, which is a lot, which is really a lot considering what's going on.
So, yeah, and, you know, let me see if they mentioned something here about expanded playoffs. I was wondering if they were talking about, it looks like what they're considering with the way they want to do the season, if they play 140 games, the rosters would actually be 29 players to help handle the situation. And then with this as well, they may expand the playoffs to 14 teams because of the shorter schedule.
Right. Would the first series still be best of five, or would they consider going to best of seven and all the series, including the first round?
That I'm looking here, they don't have any explanation on how the playoffs would be played out. They just say, as of right now, they're considering expanding the playoffs to 14 teams. They do say, and this is where I think everything's going to get pushed back, they're looking to start having workouts and exhibition games, which would be spring training, refired in late May. So, you know, that we would be literally 2 months away from that. I think that may be a little ambitious on their part to be shooting something that, okay, but, hopefully, that would be fine with me. You know, the sooner we get baseball here, the happier I'm going to be. But I just don't know if that's going to be anything they'll be able to really do.
That's an optimistic number, 140 games, I think. And if there is a season, and I don't think it'll be 140 games, but if there is a season and they do expand the playoffs to include more teams, will the World Series champion be credible?
You know, I think depending on how they structure it, because there's a lot of questions here. I mean, there's no, you know, if they do this, there's no structure on how they're going to do it. So, you know, until you find that out, I think there's always going to be people complaining if their team doesn't win. But, if you get in, you've got a chance to win. It's really kind of your team's fault if they don't. I don't see why they wouldn't be credible, but we will hear people complain about it no matter what.
Yeah. Well, you'll hear the teams that are eliminated quickly. There'll be a lot of complaints there, I'm sure. And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that there's always can be upsets in the playoffs. We've seen that over the years. It's not like the NBA. So things can happen. There could be some surprises. And as we said before many times, the best team doesn't always win.
No, and then I think, you know, there's always the possibility if the season is too short, you know, there may be a team that probably should have gotten into the playoffs that didn't because they just couldn't really get it going. But, you know, if they only play, you know, 100 games or maybe even 120 games, you know, you're looking at shaving off 62 or 42 games. You know, that could be enough for a team to get rolling and get themselves into the playoffs. So, you know, if it's a good team like you can pick them, the Yankees, the Braves, the Astros, whoever you think right now is a good team, you'll probably hear a lot of complaining then, you know, because, we didn't get in because of blah, blah, blah. So that could be an issue.
Definitely an issue. I could see a team getting hot at the end of the season. We've seen this many times. For example, when Philadelphia blew that 6.5-game lead at the end of the season, now they can hold on to a team that's starting to slump, and a team that's on fire doesn't have enough games left to get into the playoffs, and there'll be complaints on that issue.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that would be the one thing, is if, you know, your team got rolling and it was too late. You know, just kind of how that goes. You know, and then that could also change the playoff scenario, because you get a team that limps in and they may get beat by a team with the worst record because they're in a bad spot.
Well, I know that the consensus is that when the weather gets warmer, the virus will be licked. And maybe there will be a baseball season, but I certainly don't think it's going to be that many games. I would think towards 100 than that 140.
I'm convinced we're going to get some kind of season. I don't know what type of a season we're going to get, because remember the reports last week that, you know, they were talking a July start in 81 games. You know, and now all of a sudden we're up to 140 with a late May spring training.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they play that's not credible, though. If they play a half the season, I don't think that the champion will be credible then. I have my doubts. Then you'd have to have some kind of an asterisk. You got to have at least 100 games, 120 games before it becomes meaningful.
Yeah, there would definitely be a lot of questions if we just see an 81 game season. You know, then it's just kind of like, oh, okay. So
didn't they have a similar scenario years ago? Didn't they have a half season, and one half season counted, and then because I think it was a strike, another half season, and sort of some of the better teams didn't get in because of that split schedule type thing?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, you know, locally here, I believe it hurt the White Sox, but the Cincinnati Reds had the best record in baseball that year and didn't make the playoffs. So it was the strangest thing, just because of the way they decided to set everything up and do everything. You know, because apparently the Reds didn't win either of the half, and there was no wild
was
card at
unusual.
The time.
So they
didn't get in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was a crazy situation. As you said, I know the White Sox were adversely affected by that split schedule also.
So, yeah, just kind of a strange scenario. But I did see something, you know, kind of sad for me. I don't know how or why I gravitate to some of the players I used to like, but as a kid, I always liked Jimmy Winn. I don't know if you remember him. He had a pretty long career. He ended up spending about 15 years in the majors. Yeah, the majority of them with the Houston Astros. I think he might have started when they were the Colts. He passed away this
week. Not a Hall of Famer, but solid. A solid player.
He passed away this week at 78. And I think part of the reason I liked him was his nickname was the Toy Cannon. Just one of those things. But, yeah, I mean, you know, boy, looking at his numbers, if he would have been a guy who played in today's era, man, he would have been a $25 million player. With the skills he showed.
Yeah, I saw that he passed away the other day, and then I saw his age, and I kind of gulped a little bit and said, "Well, you got to keep going, right?" And it's a sad situation, and I'm not sure what the cause of death was. Was it natural causes? I don't know if it was even disclosed.
I don't think it was disclosed, but I haven't heard anything about him. But yeah, you know, just kind of looking at it, you know, his career numbers. I mean, he had 291 career homers and actually stole 225 bases. So, you know, he was one of those type of players.
Solid.
I know he was actually led the league in walks 148 times one year.
Yeah, I remember that. As you said, he He spent most of his career with Houston.
So, but yeah, he was a, you know, he was a big strikeout guy before strikeouts were cool. So, now nobody would even question it, but like he led the league 1 year back in 1967, he struck out 137 times. That wouldn't even be top 10 in today's game. So,
no, that's,
probably not.
That's
even
right.
One.
Yeah, it's unfortunate what baseball has gravitated to with all these strikeouts now, and you miss seeing the triple,
yeah.
One of the more exciting plays in baseball, but you don't see too many of those anymore, and taking the extra base. But let's hope we can see some of that at least, even a strikeout this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so odd when you think about the things that sabermetrics and analytics have really legislated out of the game. I mean, you know, teams don't really hit and run anymore every once in a while, but, you know, now moving a base runner over is considered a bad thing because you gave up your at-bat. And, you know, stuff like that just kind of baffles me. I mean, especially in a, you know, if it's a tie game and I got a guy sitting on second with nobody out, you know, if you don't get a pitch to hit, I don't have a problem with you grounding out to the second baseman to get him to third. I get it. It costs you, but there's a whole bunch of different ways you can score from third than you can from second.
Yeah. I have actually seen some people on the bench congratulating a player when he does something like that and advances the runner in a key situation.
I do it all the time. You know, that used to be part of the game. Hey, you know, and announcers would even mention it. You know, he'll be looking for something to hit to the right side here to get the guy over. And okay, great, okay, not anymore.
You know, I was thinking I was continuing on baseball, but we both saw something this week, and you know, New York has really been hit hard with the virus. One of the more New York and New Orleans, and then I see that. Another injury for a New York team cropping up, and a serious one at that, when Syndergaard has Tommy John surgery. And boy, the New York teams, both of them, seem to be inundated with injuries. It's what a jinx situation.
Yeah, well, you know, in the oddest way, this is probably a good thing for the Yankees, because with the exception of Severino, they're going to have all their other guys back by the time things get going.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. They'll give them a chance to get healthy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it really, you know, it really came to, you know, their advantage. You know, I guess advantage would be the way to look at it, you know. But,
right. Yeah,
the Mets, obviously, you know, no luck there. You know, they're not going to get Syndergaard back. There's nothing, you know, absolutely nothing they can do about that. He's going to have the Tommy John and be done for, you know, however long, you know, the year or year and a half or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, he probably won't even be ready until maybe, what, June of next year? Assuming there's another season next year, and it starts on time, he won't be back until, what, 2 or 3 months into the season at best?
Yeah, you know, with the way they handle guys now, I mean, you know, you would think in the real world with all, again, and I go through this every time, with all the professional people that they work around, and I mean, you know, some of these teams, you get better medical care than you would there than you would at a hospital. It really should only take a year, and he should be back by next spring training. But with the money these guys make, the teams are so careful with them that, you know, you literally sit an extra 6 months just because they're worried about you.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm still baffled by these injuries to the starting pitchers nowadays, the Tommy John situation and other major injuries, because the medical care is so good now. There's so much innovation and so much they can do to prevent these things from happening, and they seem to be happening at a really rapid pace to me. And I can't figure out why.
Well, I actually think I have this one figured out. When, you know, like when I was a kid, and I'm sure when you were a kid, when it was baseball season, I played baseball. When baseball season ended, you know, my friends and I would play basketball or football against each other. You know, and we went from sport to sport to sport. Now, if you're a 9-year-old with any baseball talent, your father, or maybe your parents, maybe the mothers are in on this too, you play baseball 12 months a year. Imagine the wear and tear on your arm, because everybody said it's not natural to throw overhand. Add up that wear and tear. By the time these guys get there, I'm surprised we don't have more kids in high school having Tommy John surgery with the way these things go now.
Yeah, and I think you pointed out that it is legal for a high school pitcher to throw a curveball, correct?
Yes.
And a slider? Slider is okay, too? Because that...
I believe in high school you can throw whatever you want. You know, there are certain little leagues that don't allow you to throw curveballs, but I don't know, you know, how many there are.
Yeah, well, you know, that's got to hurt. I mean, it's like you said, 12 months out of the year, and then he goes into high school and, yeah, and pitches and throws sliders and curves and goes on to college and does the same thing and gets to the majors, and he has Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. So, because if you think about it, you know, even if you're, you know, I'll go back to that 9-year-old age, because I think that's about the time they can start travel baseball, you know, and I'm sure there's no, you know, there's no rules there about anything. They're probably letting them rip with whatever they got, you know, because I know how those travel leagues are for basketball. I wouldn't be surprised if baseball's the same. But, you know, if you think about it, you know, you play your little league schedule, which is 15 or 20 games in most areas. You know, but if you're in a travel league, well, then obviously there's a lot more games. Then you go from that and you can, you know, you go to wherever your local baseball center is and you continue to hit and learn how to pitch. And you know you're throwing curveballs while you're learning how to pitch because you got to learn how to throw it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so now you got this 9-year-old snapping off curveballs. Hopefully he's got a good instructor that is teaching him how to do it correctly. But even at that age, you have to wonder, will they continue to do it correctly, you know, and not turn the wrist and not affect the elbow and everything goes that and just, you know, snap it with the fingers like you're supposed to. I don't buy that as a kid that you're mature enough to do that.
No, probably not. And I always wonder about Mike Marshall and what his theories were. And maybe some of these kids would take a look at what he advocates, and maybe they would avoid some of these arm problems.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, and I mean, it's just, it's amazing the difference when you look at those guys who, you know, like you mentioned Mike Marshall, who pitched in 100-plus games in multiple years, or, you know, the starters that could go out there and give you 300 innings and be a good pitcher. I mean, obviously you don't want a guy out there giving you 300 innings, you know, getting hit all over the yard. But, you know, I mean, we're, you know, the Fergie Jenkins, the Bob Gibsons, you know, you go back to those guys. These were the top of the league pitchers giving you 300-plus innings. Now if you get 200 out of a guy, you're jumping up and down.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned Gibson and Jenkins, because I don't know if either one of them ever had a serious injury, maybe an occasional tweaker, but nothing major throughout the course of their careers.
You know, I vaguely remember Fergie Jenkins being hurt one year. I don't remember. For some reason, that kind of...
I think you're right about that.
You know, and I'm sure, you know, these guys, you know, and I get it that these guys pitched with injuries that, you know, today's players don't pitch with. You know, I understand that. But, you know, even so, I mean, you look at it like here, I just pulled up Fergie Jenkins' player card. In 1969, he made 42 starts and completed 23 games. And he pitched in another game, a 43rd game, and got a save in that game.
Incredible. And you are aware of the fact that...
You know,
yeah, you're aware of the fact that when the Cubs got Fergie Jenkins from Philadelphia, he was not a starting pitcher. DeRocher converted
right,
him
he
to
was
a starting pitcher. Yeah, and DeRocher had the idea that he could be an effective starting pitcher, and how right he turned out to be.
Yeah, it looks here. This was later in Fergie's career. It looks like he had an injury back in 1981 that limited him to just 19 starts. But that was, you know, he only pitched two more seasons after that. So it was really towards the end of his career.
Yeah, the twilight of his career, sure.
You know, but yeah, so yeah, that was just one of those, I'm sure, you know, by then he probably wasn't the Fergie that everybody remembered.
Gibson. Yeah, it's a funny thing now about today's pitchers. They're treated so carefully and they get hurt, constantly get hurt.
Yeah, looking at Gibson's card here, it looks like 1967 he was limited to 24 starts, and then 1973 he was limited to 25. So it looks like, you know, maybe there he had a couple injuries that slowed him down. But, you know, oddly, after that 67 injury was that year, he bounced back and posted the 1.12 ERA made them change the dimensions of the mound, the pitching mound after he did that.
You mentioned 20, 25 starts. In the current crop of baseball today, an average starting pitcher who is healthy throughout the course of the year, how many starts would he make?
Here, I can tell you in 1 second here, there are still some guys who get into the 30s. The top starters, like last year, 34, there were seven guys who made 34 starts, but there are a lot of names you're going to know. Trevor Bauer, Madison Bumgarner, Aaron Nola of the Phillies, Eduardo Rodriguez of the Red Sox, who had a fantastic year. Justin Verlander, and then the other two, believe it or not, are Ivan Nova of the White Sox made 34 starts, and Marco Gonzalez made 34 starts for Seattle. So that's, you know, that's the high point. So you've got to figure an average guy is probably making 29 or 30.
Yeah, at the most.
So, you know, but I mean, you still add that up, you know, I mean, you know, you look, let me see if I can find one here just for a little bit of comparison. Come on, there's got to be one. Here you go. In 1970, Bob Gibson made 34 starts. Now, that was the 11th year of his career. 34 starts. He completed 23 games and pitched 294 innings. Justin Verlander was one of those guys last year who had 34 starts. He pitched 223 innings and only had two complete games.
Yeah, and that's the difference to me. To me, that's the big difference between the pitchers now and the pitchers then.
So, you know, and that was after, you know, Gibson had you know, like, God, how many full seasons? He had a couple of shorter seasons when he was just working up. Oh, where am I? Yeah, he had seven full seasons under him, and he was still, you know, he threw 294 innings. So,
well, one of the reasons that he threw so many innings is that the manager was afraid to come to the mound and take him out.
But, yeah, you know, I'm afraid with, you know, the way things are, we're never, you know, we're never going to, we'll never see these kind of pitchers again. So,
would you say that, let's go through an average starting major league pitcher today, an average player, not now, we're talking Verlander, some of the top guys. Would you say that that in general they're only going to pitch six innings a game?
Boy, I think that's if you're lucky. I think we're going to see it as five is going to be considered, you know, that top of the pyramid, especially in the National League now where for some reason they don't want that guy to face the opposing batting order for a third time. So if, you know, he comes up in the top of the fifth or the bottom of, you know, the top of the sixth or whatever, the bottom of the fifth, I think he's coming out of the game and they're going to the bullpen.
Yeah, it just seems that that's a trend nowadays, and I'm not sure that's entirely the way it should be. But we can't argue with the various mechanical things that they use now to make these determinations, can we?
Well, we can. I do it all the time. Nobody listens to me, but I do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, it's weird because, you know, I heard, I can't remember, it was either, I think it might have been Dallas Braden with the A's. He mentioned that, you know, there were starts for him where he would throw a lot of pitches in the first couple innings because he just didn't have the touch. And while he was able to get out of jams and maybe only give up a run or two, he had settled down by that third inning, and he had got the groove, and he was rolling along. But the problem was he loaded up a big pitch count in the first two innings. So you get to the fifth or the sixth, and you're looking at that, you know, 95, 100 pitch total. They want to take him out, but he's in his groove, and he can give you one more inning, maybe even two.
That's right. That's
but
right.
You see that 100 pitch number, and they've got to come out.
Yeah, that's the magic number.
Right, you know, they don't seem to look at the situation. You know, how were his last few innings? You know, if a guy works out of an inning with 10 pitches, why can't he go out there one more time?
Seems
you know, he looks
amazing.
Like he's in a good rhythm. You know, you got the bullpen up already. Send him out there. You keep the bullpen going just in case.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know,
exactly.
Maybe you get one extra inning, or maybe an inning and a third out of this guy. You know, and he's mowing people down. But you know, sabermetrics say, analytics say, get him out. So they take him out.
Do you know off the top how long it's been since they started to track how many pitches were thrown by a starter during the course of the game? It was never mentioned years ago.
It's been a while now, but they never used to do it. I know I heard somebody mention Juan Marichal threw like 300 pitches in an inning or something like that, or in a game. So,
well, that's almost impossible to believe that. I could see maybe half of
If I remember correctly, it was like a 15 or 16 inning game, and he pitched every inning.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That has happened.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that's staggering. Of course, I mentioned this to you, and you probably remember it, but I believe that the White Sox had a pitcher. He was a knuckleball pitcher. Was it Hoyt Wilhelm? I don't remember now. But he pitched both games of a doubleheader.
Yeah, it was Wilbur Wood. Started both games.
That's right, Wilbur Wood.
Yeah, just one of those things. But you know, as a knuckleballer, they always said you could do that because you know they're supposed to be less wear and tear.
Yeah, that's a great pitch if it works. But you don't see too many knuckleballers anymore.
No, geez, yeah, it's tough to find guys. So, but all right, I have a lovely transition here for you because I wanted to ask you this. You may not remember this, but have you ever heard of the show called Million Dollar Arm? There was also a movie by that name that you may have seen.
No, I've heard of the Million Dollar Man. Wasn't there $6 Million Man? Wasn't there an action show years ago?
The Bionic Woman as well. But no, this was a game show created in India to find obviously a baseball player. And I believe it was thought up by an agent. One of the two came up with this. And now the kid who ended up winning it, and I'm probably going to butcher his first name here, but I believe it's pronounced Rinku Singh, was the guy who actually won it. And the Pittsburgh Pirates signed him and took a chance on him. You know, he spent – what do they have here? looks like he spent five seasons in their minors. Never got above Class A, but actually had decent numbers. He was 10-6 with a 2.97 ERA, and pitched in 85 games. But it just, you know, it just didn't work out for him. But interestingly enough, he managed to show up on TV Wednesday night as a member of a tag team on WWE NXT. So he went from professional baseball player to professional wrestler.
That's interesting. I didn't see the match, but was he a decent worker?
Well, all they did was a run-in. They beat down one half of the tag champs. So I actually haven't seen him wrestle a match yet. I just saw some highlights of it when I saw the story, because I didn't know it was him. I had seen the Million Dollar Arm movie, and I always kind of wondered what happened to the guy. And, yeah, he's a NXT wrestler now.
Well, they didn't sign him because of that notoriety, did they?
No, not at all. My guess is they probably didn't even know when they signed him that he was the Million Dollar Arm winner. So
that show was only in India, though, you said, right? There was never a show like that here?
No, yeah, they never did it here. The only thing that premiered here, of course, was the movie. So, you know, if you get a chance, maybe while you're quarantined, you can hunt it down and check it out. But yeah, that was the extent of it. But the reason I use this to transition for you is because I wanted to ask you, you know, WrestleMania is this weekend, and
I think it's next. Isn't it next weekend?
For some reason, I thought it was this weekend, but maybe it is next weekend. You know, I know that they've taped the majority of the matches, so it's not going to be done live. But I've seen now at least six wrestlers that either had to be taken off the card, or I believe one, Roman Reigns, actually decided not to work because he has a weakened immune system from his battle with leukemia, you know, and he just didn't want to take the chance. With everything going on, wouldn't it have been better for WWE to postpone this and use the name somewhere else down the line? Because I know as of right now, there's Roman Reigns. I saw Cesaro, Asuka, The Miz, Dana Brooke, Rey Mysterio, and I believe Bobby Lashley all can't make it for one reason. Oh, and Andrade all can't make it for one reason or another that has to do with the coronavirus. So I don't know, you know, and these are some of their top guys. I don't understand why they just didn't push it off and bring it back when everything was cleared up.
You would think that would make more sense, and I don't think, you know, I'm still not sure. I think it may be next weekend, but maybe you're right. I don't know, but I can't see them getting much in the way of a buy rate, especially if the show is taped and there's no audience, which is going to detract from the product. Aren't the results available online, the spoilers, as they call it?
As of now, no. Nothing is leaked out yet. And you are right. It's April 4th and April 5th this year because it's a Saturday-Sunday thing for them.
Right. I know it's
so,
2 days this time.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of wonder, you know, what, you know, if it even makes sense now with all of this to go through with it. And I think what may be a big concern for them that they have to maybe look into is apparently The Miz showed up to work and got sick. Now, they're not saying what he had or what it was or how it worked out, but, you know, if he is actually sick, depending, again, of course, what it is, that could be a big issue.
Definitely. And Yeah, don't you think it would be in their best interest to just cancel it or postpone it for a few months?
Yeah. Well, you know, and obviously now, it's too late. They've got the majority of it in the can, and it's ready to go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you would
have
thought, you know, I mean, like, tape this and you know, give it away to people. Hey, you know, this is what we're going to do to you to pass the time. We're not calling it WrestleMania, you know, but here you go. We'll put on a big, you know, free show for you or, you know, however you want to, you know, whatever you want to call it. And then, yeah, come back in, you know, April, May, you know, May, June, July, whenever things clear up. Hey, look at this. You know, we're going to do WrestleMania for you.
Yeah.
And just get rid of whatever that pay-per-view was supposed to be that month.
Yeah, that would make more sense. And it's hard to, you know, of course, as we both, you know more than I do, that it's a work. But to perform a major pay-per-view without an audience, the excitement has got to be lacking.
To be fair, I have wrestled in front of six people before, so
I
know all about
that. That's true. That's true.
I definitely could see this being difficult.
Yeah, and you've mentioned something very interesting to me. You wrestled before six people. I know that sometimes there's a small crowd on the independent circuit. When the wrestlers see a very small crowd like that, do they kind of taper off their performance and don't do as much impact or high spots as they would before a bigger crowd?
As surprising as it is, no, they don't, because with independent wrestling, it's a lot of young guys. And, you know, these guys, you know, in reality, I guess you could say maybe they don't know any better, so they don't really know how to dial it down. So they're still out there doing, you know, all their flying moves, or however you want to describe them, their high spots, as it would be called in the wrestling industry. Doesn't matter how many people are out there. They go out there and, you know, leave it all on the line, which is, you know, a big credit to them.
Yeah,
probably not the
sure.
smartest thing, but a big credit to them.
Well, you were in the business, what, over 20 years, and you wrestled Illinois, Tennessee, Florida, a lot of different states. And when you first started, did you see all these high spots that they're doing now, or when did that start? 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Well, you know, it's always been one of the things that, whether you want to call them cruiserweights or junior heavyweights, they were called in some areas I wrestled in, you know, whatever you want to call them, that stuff has always been part of their game. Not to the extreme it is now, but, you know, they were always doing moves off the ropes, you know, here and there. You got to remember, when I started, in some territories, it was illegal to do a move off the top rope. You would get disqualified. You know, in some territories, just like being thrown over the top rope was a disqualification. So you had to remember where you were wrestling to kind of make sure you didn't get your match cut short for something like that. But yeah, you know, it had always been part of their game, and now that everybody has incorporated it, and in reality, you don't see true heavyweights. There are a few guys that would be true heavyweights, but most of the guys now are at that 200, 220 pound cruiserweight level that they can do this stuff with.
Right.
Please visit coronavirus.gov.
So yeah, it was something that was always kind of there, but now it's just exploited by everybody.
Yeah, I hear you. And let me ask you one other thing. As long as we're on that subject, we thought we were going to be talking about this more, but in the days when there was a state athletic commission, would the referee actually DQ someone even though that was not the planned finish of the match?
You know, it depends where you were. because, you know, things would vary from state to state. You know, and it also depended, let's just say, kind of who you were working for and if they were in good with the commission or not. You know, because there were, let's see, the best way to say that, there were a lot of guys who worked for the commission that you could just give them a little something under the table, so to speak, and you didn't have any problems. And there were other guys that were by the book, and there was no way around it. You had to do it exactly the way they said to do it. And the humorous thing, we got in trouble once. You know, one of the rules in Illinois was there was no male-female contact allowed. And at the time, WWE had China. And there was male-female contact all over the place. They had a show locally where she, I forgot who she beat. I think she was Intercontinental Champ at the time. And, you know, they had contact. So we did it on our show, and the state threatened to pull our license.
Wow.
And when we asked them about it, they said, well, they, you know, WWE can do it because it's a World Wrestling Entertainment. Like, okay, well, what's the difference? It's got wrestling in the title. So, but yeah, that was their excuse.
I know that's,
you know, not the fact that the state both had money to do their show.
Yeah, for sure. I remember when Vince McMahon made the announcement, we're not wrestling anymore, we're sports entertainment. And
so,
I wonder, are there any states left that still have an athletic commission anymore?
You know, I believe there are a couple. You know, I don't think there's too many, but like the other humorous thing with the Illinois State Commission that a lot of people probably don't know, it's the Boxing and Wrestling Commission. When you run a show, they take 10% of your gate. So like if you're an indie fed charging $10 a ticket, you're really only getting $9 because they're taking one, and they want their money no matter how many people showed up. You know, like if those six, like I said, I wrestled in front of six people, even though that was in Wisconsin and there was no commission. If that would have been in Illinois, they would have wanted their $6. But they didn't enforce that rule on WWE where they could have actually made a bunch of money.
You know, there was something behind the scenes that we didn't know about, right? There was some money changing.
Well,
you
know, you had – you know, the guys from the commission go there and they would get their payday. And of course it was a little bigger from the WWE than it was from the indie feds, because the indie feds just paid what we were required to pay, where WWE kind of more or less they were being paid to look the other way while they did whatever they wanted, and the indie feds just couldn't do that. But yeah, I mean, it was so weird because the rules didn't apply to them, but yet we had to follow these. And they're like, wait, you know, and like you had to buy a promoter's license for $5,000. Luckily it was just a one fee, but you had to have a promoter's license to run. And that's why there were so little feds at the time, because a lot of these indie guys don't have $5,000 to put out for a license. So yeah, it's the government. So it's incredibly shady.
Well, you, of course, also promoted, and so you know all the backstage shenanigans that go on, I guess, through the course of your career.
So, yeah, and it's humorous. And then, oddly, as strange as it sounds, and I know a lot of people who don't live in Illinois won't remember this, but I'm sure you do. Remember we had that license to bribe scandal?
I vaguely remember that, yeah. When did that take place?
Yeah, this was some years back. Well, oddly, I believe it was two or three of those guys that went to jail for that were on the Boxing and Wrestling Commission. So it just kind of humorous that they worked, you know, that was their other job, was they worked at the DMV and, you know, getting paid to get free license, you know, give out free license.
Yeah.
And, so.
Well, Illinois has never been known to be a lily white state anyway, let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, and, you know, I'm sure this went on other places. It just happened to be, you know, I had just happened to see these guys at wrestling shows because they were part of the commission, and then all of a sudden I'm reading their names in the paper because they're going to jail for taking all this money from PBS. I was like, oh, you're kidding me. Well, that explains a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting that you pointed that out. But these things happen, and not just in Illinois, I suppose. Although, as I mentioned before, we don't have the greatest reputation. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure every state has. I guess it would be more interesting to see if there's a state out there that doesn't have a shady politician in it. Some kind of infrastructure like that. It's just kind of how it works. But, I think that's why you get in the game, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. When you wrestled now, and say you wrestled and for the State Athletic Commission in Illinois, but then it was finally abolished. It's not there anymore. Do you know, was there a difference in the product when you competed?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a difference, huh?
Yeah, well, the one good thing about the state was by needing that promoter's license in Illinois especially, you didn't get the every fed on a corner scenario where guys buy a ring and they put it up and they attempt to train guys even though they're not trained and you're just trying to imitate what you saw off television so you don't know how to do it. You know, which just makes for incredibly bad wrestling. That's the one negative there is just, you know what I mean? Like you even see it, you know, you would see it now if we didn't have this going on with everybody getting their tax returns, this is the big time for just shows to pop up, you know, cause a guy gets some money in his pocket. He goes, oh, I'm going to run a show. You know, and then he promotes his show and he draws 25 guys and he's out of business because he can only afford to run one show. So.
And also, can't that be dangerous for the wrestlers involved, especially if they're not adequately trained?
Hugely dangerous for the wrestlers involved. Because obviously, I mean, you know, even though you don't watch it as regularly as you used to, you've seen some of the stuff they do on TV. Imagine an untrained guy trying that.
Yeah, that's risky with a trained professional, and then to see a guy who doesn't have much experience and doesn't know the ins and outs of pro wrestling doing the same thing, that is incredibly risky, life threatening.
Yeah, because like as sad as it is to say, I won't be surprised if we see a lot more injuries coming out because you know the new hot move is that WWE calls it the Destroyer. It's actually called the Canadian Destroyer. Which is flipping pile driver. I could just imagine the untrained idiots that, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this to you. Yeah, no. Sorry.
Yeah. That was Petey Williams who did that, wasn't it? Wasn't he that move?
Yeah,
his?
Petey Williams was the originator of it. And for the longest time he was the only one who could pull it off. Now you see it every week in WWE or AEW or Ring of Honor or whoever you're watching. It shows up.
Well, as we pointed out before, it can be a very risky being a poorly trained professional wrestler. And I always point out that one wrestler that wrestled in his first match in a bar in Wisconsin, lost his life because of being inadequately trained. So it can be very dangerous.
While you're over there, hit the link, get yourself on over to the Facebook page. Give that a like one all the way over there. Don't forget, we got the Twitter feed on, which is at Sports Time Radio. Feel free to look me up on it at Sports Time with GURKTIME. And hey, if you stop on this to see my live, thank you for being there. We greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, you can go over to GURKTIME.com and listen to the podcast whenever you want.